It's Wednesday afternoon, and you know what that means, Chris Bond. Johnny Manziel just scored again. No, I'm kidding. It's time for the show, Graham, our weekly podcast. Adam Alter here from the Braves Back Nation alongside Chris Bond, Arkansas Sports 360. Chris, I was obviously joking, but another week, another loss, another horrible defensive performance. What are you taking away from the A&M debacle?
I got nothing.
That was a long pause.
I don't know what to tell you about the defense. I mean, they are bad. They were bad coming into the season. John L. told us back in April, this team has a chance to be good as long as there are no injuries, because there isn't enough depth to overcome that.
Yeah, and how'd that work out?
Guess what? Every week it's a new guy, especially on defense. I mean, at some points they're out there. I still think Johnny Manziel would have had a great game against Arkansas. I'm not making excuses, but at some points they're out there with like fourth string guys in the secondary. I mean, yeah. it's brutal.
Yeah, not only have there been injuries, but there have been injuries in the worst way. One, it's hitting their key guys. You know, Tyler Wilson's missed time. Chris Gregg, as I went in depth last week, is so vital to this team. He's missed time. And then the other factor is it seems to be hitting the same parts of the team. Like you mentioned, the secondary. I mean, how many more secondary guys can they go through? Even if you have depth, boy, that is taxing.
It is. And I mean, but they don't have depth. And so what that does is not only does it put guys who are less talented physically on the field, you're now limiting what the defensive coaches can call. Everybody wants to make this some sort of indictment, you know, on Paul Haynes and his ability as a defensive coordinator. I don't think he's been what people wanted him to be. We tried to warn people at the beginning of the year not to read too much into the Cotton Bowl because
– I didn't. I bought in.
Okay.
I admit it. I drank the Kool-Aid.
All right. I tried to warn people. You know, we don't know what to make of the Cotton Bowl. That's ancient history, though. The point I'm trying to make is this. Paul Haynes – could be Kirby Smart. He may be Nick Saban. We have no idea because he has nothing to work with. He is one concussion, pulled hamstring away from you playing at safety or corner.
Yeah, at this point they could probably use me just for the extra body. But you're right. He's limited in what they can do because the players are limited in what they can do. And you know, after the game, you know, this has been a reoccurring theme. You know, the players are saying, look, they're calling the right plays. We're not doing our jobs. We're not doing our assignments, and so we're failing. So I brought that up to John L. Smith on Monday. You know, this is what the players are saying. Do you agree with that? And in so many words, he said yes, but he said something he said almost every week. We need to dial it down. We need to pare it back and trim to just what we can handle. How much more at this point, five games into the season, this is turning into Tecmo Bowl where you have four plays to choose from. It's either right. Up an A, down an A, left an A, or right an A, and that's all you got.
And it looks like it. Meanwhile, you know, the offenses are operating on, you know, like a EA Sports NCAA football 2013 playbook where they got, you know, hundreds of different plays to choose from.
Yeah, but the problem is they can only execute passing plays and only some of those.
I'm talking about opposing offenses.
Oh,
we're not.
No, you're right. Oh, you're totally right.
You know, I mean, it's just, and if there has ever a moment that defined this season for the Arkansas defense, it was Johnny Manziel literally running circles around the Arkansas defense.
That reminded me of a high school game where, like, there's one player on the field that he's the one that's going to play at the next level, and everybody else is just, you know, having fun in high school, and he's literally just mowing guys over and just. You can try and tackle me, but we know that how this is going to go. And it really looked like that. I mean, Tank Wright trying to chase him and diving at his feet. That was an embarrassing play.
It got to the point where it was so bad, though, that it was comical.
Oh, like, you could cue up the Benny Hill music on that play. You know, because that's what it looked like.
It was so bad. But they just, I mean, there aren't any players that they've scaled the defense back. And I tried to ask guys about this a couple weeks ago. We keep hearing, I mean, we heard in the spring that Paul Haynes was going to scale things down from the previous
year.
We've heard it every week. And you just alluded, John L. brought it up on Monday. They're going to simplify again. And it's just like, I mean, at what point? I don't know. I'm
at a loss. It's getting to the point where they're going to call look for a run, that's the play, or look for a pass, that's the play. That's all. That's about all they got left. But there's no fixing, you know. And what boggles my mind is the coaches and the players keep wanting to talk about, like, that penalty that stalled the drive when they had the offensive tackle line up too far off the ball. Like, that ruined the game for them. You still lost by 48 points. You really right. going to tell me that one penalty, which killed the momentum of one drive, ruined the game? Come on.
Yes.
Yes? You're agreeing with them.
I'm going to agree on this level. So that penalty backs them up. Then Tyler throws the interception, pushes the defense right back on the field. That play completely deflated the defense. They come out and give up a quick touchdown. That, in turn, deflates the offense. And then it just unraveled from there. This team is so fragile.
Yes, that's what I'm hearing from you. You're telling me
yes.
they can't handle one thing to go wrong without completely folding up and urinating in their pants.
At this point, yes. Which is surprising to me, because when you think back to what these players have been through since last season.
Shouldn't that harden them? Shouldn't that have hardened them?
You would think, but I just think eventually, I think it all piled up to be too much. The death of a teammate, losing your coach, all these injuries hitting. I just think now, the second anything goes wrong, it's just like, oh, hell, here we go again. And I think it just deflates them. I do. I think they're fragile right now. And I know they'll tell you they're not. And they'll tell you that they're going to fight, you know, through every play in every game. I saw something completely different at Texas A&M. I saw a team that was fragile, and that at the first sign of adversity, that penalty and that interception, it just spiraled out of control.
Here's something I want to get your opinion on, and we didn't discuss this in show prep, but I've had people in the community ask me this more than once, and I'm not always sure what the answer is. What is the effect, and how would things be different if Bobby Petrino were still the coach? Because I have a hard time saying they'd be a whole lot better than we're seeing. They'd probably be, what, 3-2? They wouldn't blow the ULM game, and they'd probably beat Rutgers, but I don't see how having Bobby Petrino would clean up this complete dumpster fire of a defense and an offensive line.
Yeah, it wouldn't. I mean, Bobby might have been able to come up with some ways to scheme and attack defenses that maximized what they have in the offensive line. But I just have a real hard time believing that. And I'm on record. I mean, I've said this on radio since last year. I'm saying it again today. I never thought this was a 14-0 team. I never thought this team – I thought the gap had grown substantially between LSU and Arkansas and Arkansas and Alabama. We saw it last year, 24 points in each
Both
of those
games. Yeah.
48 total points separated them from the top two teams in the league. Bobby Petrino coming back was not going to close that gap. It would not be what it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an abomination. This is they're headed for the worst collapse in BCS history.
This has to be the worst season in Arkansas history, right? Considering the preseason rankings and the discussion coming into the season.
Yeah, I can't think of one where they were coming off, you know, and had, I mean, 15 starters coming back. Some people say 17 starters coming back, whatever the number is, to have that many starters coming back, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, Houston Nutt had bad losses individually, you know, and then, of course, like the Citadel was a bad loss individually. They've never been a complete mess of a season like this coming in as a top 10 team, right?
Right. And to give up, you know, 50 in back-to-back conference games for the first time in school history. And that's going back. I mean, we're talking not just SEC, but back in the Southwest Conference days. It's historically bad for sure.
And no one's going to sit here and say Petrino's not a great coach, because obviously he's a great coach. But just like Paul Haynes is limited because of what his players are limited, Bobby Petrino would be limited by those very same reasons. But speaking of Petrino, his brother Paul, still on this staff, still coordinating the offense. A couple of weeks ago in his Tuesday meet and greet with the media, showed a very fiery attitude. We talked about it on this show. You know, we liked what, you know, the desperation in his voice and the urgency. And then last week he seemed totally deflated again because they lost again. Well, yesterday that fiery attitude was back, and it was good to see.
Yeah, it was. It was real good to see. And I think, you know, Paul was a little bit upset with himself, which I like to see, because he's like the rest of us. He's trying to figure out how on earth does this team run 98 plays, pile up 515 yards, and come away with 10 points. I mean, it makes no sense. But we know it's because they struggled in the red zone. They can't run the football. Tyler's trying to make it all up in one play. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that the red zone offense is stalled. Penalties, fumbles, whatever, dropped passes. But I liked the fire that Paul Petrino showed, and I thought he basically said, look, it's on me. It's my job to come up with ways to score points. We're not doing it. And it was good to at least hear him acknowledge that he has a hand in what's going on here.
Yeah, I loved his honesty. You know, he said, I've never had a game where we put up those kind of numbers and lost, let alone get our butt kicked,
yes,
which is exactly what he said. And another really telling moment for me, and you may not even have noticed this, but when Paul was done and he was walking out as the players were walking in for their interviews, another media member just kind of really softly said to Paul something along the lines of, hey, you know, thanks for hanging in there and answering these questions. And he was like, no, he's like, I get it. You know, he understands why we're having to ask these negative questions. You know,
right.
This is not lost on him or the other coaches. But the issue is correcting all the negatives and putting together four quarters. We've seen a quarter of decent ball.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even come close to seeing four quarters. That includes the win over Jacksonville State. I don't know. I mean, that seems like – just putting four quarters together seems like such a tall task for this team right now.
It is, and it all goes back to what we were talking about just a minute ago, just the how, I think, emotionally and mentally spent they are with all the stuff, all the injuries that continue to pile up and all the struggles they seem to have. They can't get out of their own way. I mean, I thought John L. Smith summed it up really well when he said basically they are their own worst enemy. They can't get out of their own way. And that's why they can't seem to put together any sort of consistent game. They can't even put together a good drive offensively. They'll go on a 10-play drive, and it stalls out.
Yeah, inside the 20. That was the whole story I did in Razorback Nation last night, was they're moving the ball plenty.
Yeah.
And then they get to the 20, and it's like they forgot what the game of football is, and they don't know what to do.
And if you have a situation like that, you know, Arkansas had some drives last year where they would stall. But they also had the ability to hit those, you know, one play, 20-second, 65-yard scores.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that this year.
Except against Rutgers.
Yeah. Yeah, they had some there. You know, they had the 164-yard Nile touchdown on a screen pass. They came out and looked really good, and then it just fizzled. They weren't explosive. They couldn't string together a quality drive. It's just, you know... It's same song, fifth verse now.
Yeah, I continue to harp on the offensive line because, offensively, the run blocking to me is the clearest weakness on this team. I mean, we're five games into the season, and Nile Davis, the team's starting running back, has reached his top speed exactly one time. And it wasn't even on a run play. It was a check down where there was only one guy in front of him, and he made a miss and scored. We discussed last week, and maybe not even last week, maybe other weeks, you know, is Nile either A, not healthy fully, or B, did we overrate him? I saw some things in that A&M game that made me think, hey, this guy is still a pretty good player.
Yep.
One, the pass play. Two, I think there were two plays where he actually had a pretty good hole to run through and operate, and he looked like a good running back, but two plays is not nearly enough.
Yeah. I mean, he had a quarter. He had a really good quarter. I mean, if you look at his first half stats, you know, 124 yards of total offense, and in the second half, they're playing from behind, and they're not getting him the ball, and he winds up with 129 yards of total offense.
Almost all of that came in the first half.
I was going to say he had 5 yards after halftime of total offense. I mean, and there are too many times where he's getting the ball. I mean, he's getting carries. But he's going backwards. He's going the wrong direction.
He's getting hit in the backfield,
yeah.
Or he's getting stacked up at the line because there's no hole, you know. Or he's trying to make something out of nothing, and he fumbles.
You could tell talking to him this week, though, he feels more like himself.
he had a lot better attitude on Tuesday, because the most Tuesdays is when we get to talk to offensive players as media. And the last couple of weeks, he's been very standoffish, very short answers, just clearly doesn't want to be there, doesn't want to be talking. That was not the case yesterday. He was he seemed to be in a lot better spirits, a lot more willing to open up a little bit and have a conversation. So, you know, he said everyone's focusing on the negatives. I'm trying to focus on the positives. There's not many of them, but I suppose that's the attitude now they got to take. I want to go back to something you mentioned that John L. Smith said.
Mm-hmm.
At times, we're our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Well, at times, John L.'s mouth is his own worst enemy. And we had another instance on Monday. This one didn't get quite as much publicity as the I don't give a crap what the fans say or the smile rant.
Right.
But this was a question you asked him, Chris. So tell us what happened.
Well, you know, a lot of times – I'm going to set it up too. A lot of times you get into this, into a situation where everything seems to be going wrong. So we're talking to the players and the coaches about the injuries, about the red zone struggles. They can't stop anybody on defense. So what I wanted to know, the question I posed to John L. Smith was, what do you like about your football team? We're asking you all the negative stuff. Tell us what you like. What's going right? Where have you improved?
And what did he say?
8 seconds passed.
Eight whole seconds. And if you're sitting at home right now, pause this. Look at your watch and count off 8 seconds and tell me how long that feels like to you. Because it felt like a minute in that room.
It's an eternity. I mean, and especially for a guy. And the reason it was significant, the pause was significant, is because this is a guy who has not paused. I mean, that's been part of the problem, right? It's just the live
verbal
microphone's
diarrhea.
On and off to the races, you know? So 8 seconds, and I wrote about it like this. Imagine if your wife or girlfriend comes into the living room. You guys are on date night. She comes in the living room. You guys are getting ready to go, and she says, "How do I look in this outfit?" 4 seconds of pausing.
1 second of pausing is too much.
A 4 second pause is getting you on the couch for a couple nights, okay? You're not sleeping in bed. 8 seconds, okay?
And not only was it 8 seconds, it wasn't just silence. It was him moving his head back and forth, clearly in deep thought. He did this, well, and then he starts making this sound effect, and it's just like, wow, this guy is searching for anything.
Right. And I'm not going to put this on John L. Like, I'm not trying to pile on him.
I am.
I think it tells us more. It tells us more about the team and the state of the team than it does about John L. I thought surely going into the press conference, surely things are not as bad as we think.
What made you think that?
Just because, I mean, John L's the eternal optimist. As media, as fans, we tend to fixate on the negative. So there's got to be something going right. There's got to be something we've missed.
And then after that question and answer, what'd you feel like?
Things are as awful as we think they are.
they truly, truly are.
They really are terrible.
And then when he finally did start talking, he basically went through every single position and said something minutely positive. So it was a real non-answer.
Well, it boiled down to this. Tyler Wilson's back from his concussion.
Yeah.
Kobe Hamilton's had a couple good games. They have a good defensive line at times.
At times. Against the run, not against the pass. They're
right.
Not getting any pass rush.
And that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, those were like the three takeaways. And they were all things that we knew going into the season.
Well, then you asked later, you know, we spoke to Alfred Davis in that same day in that press room, and you asked him the exact same question. He didn't pause, but he also didn't say anything football related. What
right.
did he say?
And nobody's hung up their shoes yet.
Yeah,
nobody's quit. And then he told a really charming story about seventh grade basketball and how they lost a game and four people on the team quit. And they couldn't even hold practices because they didn't have enough players. So nobody's quit yet, he said. People may not have quit on the season, but people are quitting in games. And I think those are two different things.
Yes.
They're still fighting. They're still working. They're still, at least for a quarter and a half, we're seeing some decent football out of them. And then they fold. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here.
But it's pretty telling that to that very direct question that, A, the head coach took a lifetime and a half to come up with a non-answer, and B, the player said something not really game related. It was more season related. Now, I jumped right in there when he was done telling his charming story. I followed up. I said, "What about on the field? What is good?" And he said the run stopping's been a lot better than it has been in the past. And I kind of agree with him. The run stopping has been a lot better than it's been in the past.
Why don't you ask me that question? What I like about Arkansas,
Chris,
and I'm going to answer it for you.
We've been asking a lot of questions about what's going wrong. Tell what's going right. What do you like about this team right now?
What I like about Arkansas is they're getting ready to play Auburn. That's
wow,
the
that
best thing they've
BS
got going for them.
Answer?
No, it's not a BS answer.
But that is a non-answer.
No. It's a great listen.
You are full of garbage.
No. This is legitimate. This is a legitimate thing. Auburn is not good.
No, Auburn's not good.
They are a bad football team.
Yeah.
And if ever there was. I mean, the problem is Arkansas is bad, Auburn's bad, so one of them is going to be the remedy for the other.
This really is. It's sad that it's come to this because I think it was you. No, it was Robbie. Robbie Nyswong, another media member, asked Kobe Hamilton yesterday, you know, 2 years ago when you went to Auburn, you know, you ended up going to the Sugar Bowl and they ended up, you know, winning the national title. Isn't it crazy how much things have changed in 2 years? Because this week, this is the national pillow fight of the week. Like, this is a non-game.
It's so bad, but you know what? I compared it to this. We do every week on Arkansas Sports 360, we do a roundtable Q&A, and we bring in somebody from the national media or whatever.
Thanks for inviting me, by the way. Oh, wait. Go on. Never mind. No.
Oh, it's like that, huh?
We're having you on our show.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, we'll get around to that here in a minute. So, but every week we have this weekly roundtable Q&A we do. My comparison Auburn, Arkansas this week is this. There are certain movies and songs that are so awful you can't help but be entertained by them. The Chicken Dance is
what?
The Chicken Dance is a perfect example.
That was
of
your go-to? Yeah, but that's great at like weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Well,
and
this summer my best friend got married. So he had co-best men. The two of us got together, and we made the wedding playlist. And we had – I mean, we really – like, we spent hours researching this thing and putting it together. The one song that got everybody in the reception on the dance floor was the Chicken Dance.
It's like the Electric Slide.
Yeah.
Or the Macarena.
The Macarena is a perfect example. Nobody would say it's, like, a great song, but it entertains everyone.
Well,
it's
not so much a song as it is a social activity.
That's Arkansas-Auburn football. Nobody is going into this thinking it's good football. They're just looking at this and going, eh.
You're so right, because college football is a social activity. It's people getting together, drinking beer, watching the game, tailgating, whatever. Wow, this is dwindled down to nothing more than a get-together for people.
Yeah.
Including the players and coaches. It's a get-together.
Everybody's going to be entertained by it. It's going to be terrible.
Oh, my goodness. You just gave me an epiphany.
I know. It's deep. I'm really deep here. You had no idea. The Chicken Dance.
I'm going to shake your hand. You started that way over here, and you brought it all the way back, and I love you for it. That was good.
That's what I'm here for.
But that tells you something about this season outlook. I mean, there's a better chance. Honestly, I think there's a better chance Arkansas goes 1-11 than 4-8 at this point. Just because, like you said, you clearly painted the picture. One thing goes wrong, and everything goes down the toilet. And there's no way they're going to get through a whole game without one thing going wrong. No way.
No, there's not. But, you know, I don't think Auburn has that same kind of – they don't have that, like, ferocious killer instinct on offense that A&M did, or that overall killer instinct that Alabama did. And if you look at this, you talk about there's a chance Arkansas could go 1-11. It's hard for me to tell you that that's not a very good possibility. But there is also, if we're being glass half full here, and let's suppose the other half of the glass that's missing was like bourbon, but if we're going glass half full, Arkansas could go into South Carolina at 5-4. They have a stretch of games. Auburn, Kentucky, Ole Miss, and Tulsa. They could conceivably win those four games.
They could just as conceivably lose them all.
They could. But I'm going glass half full. and the half that's missing is bourbon that's been drank. You know, and like, so I'm feeling good, yeah. And I'm telling you, it's possible.
Kool-Aid and bourbon. You know, I told you that I came into the season drinking the Kool-Aid. Well, I am the complete opposite direction right now. Like, I just don't see anything on the field that gives me enough confidence to say Hogs are going to win this one because Auburn's terrible or because Kentucky's terrible. Arkansas's terrible. So, you know, we're looking at this game this week, two bad teams, and you've got the stats pulled up in front of us. You know, Arkansas's stronger half is offense. Auburn's stronger half is defense. So it's like their two strengths are going against each other, and then their two weaker sides are going against each other. But
they're still. But here's
even
the thing.
Arkansas's strength is so flawed in that they can only pass the ball, which gets their quarterback killed.
Right.
You know, I feel like Auburn's strength will win out over Arkansas's strength.
See, I'm looking at this, and Auburn's kind of terrible on defense too. I mean, they've got a strong line. They're bad. I mean, their front seven's pretty good. You know, they're getting after quarterbacks a little bit. Tyler, I'm sure, will be running for his life. But their pass efficiency defense is really bad. They're 10th in the league. You know, their total defense is 12th in the league. It's conceivable that Tyler gets hot. Maybe somebody steps up to be a nice little accompanying piece to Kobe, who basically is carrying the offense right now. I mean, it's conceivable. I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm thinking maybe Auburn is so bad that Arkansas has a chance.
Maybe. But I only need to think about two things. One, Arkansas can't run on anybody, so I don't care what Auburn's run defense is like. They can't run on Rutgers. They can't run on ULM. They could barely run on Jacksonville State.
Yep.
So who cares what Auburn's run defense is like? Two, the two best players on Auburn's defense are their defensive ends. And we already know about protecting Tyler issues.
Yep.
I guarantee you Gene Chizik's entire game plan is going to be hit Tyler Wilson as much as possible. So that you're cutting the head off the snake. So
yeah,
the end, game over. Plus it's at Auburn, you know?
If we hadn't seen Arkansas get outscored 110-10 in SEC games, I could talk myself into them winning this game. The problem is it's on the road, and
whoa. I thought you were glass half full of bourbon here.
Now, when I'm coming back around. The problem is it's on the road, and we've seen Arkansas fold and get outscored 110-10 in SEC games.
Boy, they fold up like origami, man. They just...
Yeah, if they show me something in this game, though, if they can win this game for all the reasons that I'm telling you, the half-full, glass-half-full reasons, if they can win it, then I'll feel inclined to pick them maybe over the next 3 weeks after this.
I just came up with a new analogy.
Okay.
This season is like a supernova.
Oh, this
because is... the last couple of years, this program has been a bright, shining star, shining brighter and brighter, you know, back-to-back double-digit wins. And then all of a sudden, what happens when a supernova gets too big? It collapses upon itself and becomes a black hole where all matter ceases to exist. And that is what this season is. It is a black hole, an abyss, a destruction of everything around it, including the coaching staff, which will be wiped out. All the good players are going pro. And then, you know, even if Bobby... none of that stuff had happened and he was still around. You know, next year was a 7 or 8 win team anyway. So now you add in all this other stuff, and boy, the future just looks kind of bleak right now. And, you know, they got to make a coaching hire.
Yeah.
It is a supernova turned black hole. And now what? That's your answer. Long sigh.
8 seconds of silence.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've talked about it, you know, going forward, the coaching hire. You've been doing some interesting research about coaching hires in the SEC. What have you found?
Well, I just thought it would be interesting to go back and look at, okay, what have other programs that needed a coach done? And I went back to look at the last 5 hires, or last 7 hires is what I've come up with. And here's your list. You want me to just run through the list?
Yeah.
Ole Miss hired Hugh Freeze.
That was this year.
Yep, from Arkansas State.
Sitting head coach.
Okay, at a small school. Had 1 year of experience
at the FBS level or Division I, whatever you want to call it. Florida hired Will Muschamp in 2011. Got him, what was he, defensive coordinator at Texas?
D coordinator and the coach in waiting for Mack Brown.
James Franklin, Vanderbilt, offensive coordinator at Maryland. I believe he was coach in waiting at Maryland also.
Maybe. But those were both in 11, both coordinators.
Yep. 2010, Joker Phillips got promoted from offensive coordinator or whatever he was at Kentucky.
I thought
Kentucky.
He was defense. I don't. It doesn't matter. He stinks.
Oh, he was
he's
terrible.
Gone after this year.
He was the coach in waiting at Kentucky. He got promoted. He stinks. He's gone. Derek Dooley had been at Louisiana Tech. Didn't have a winning record.
That was such a bizarre hire, but a sitting head coach.
Well, and the reason that he was attractive to people is because he was a Nick Saban disciple, and people thought he could come in and replicate the process.
Whatever.
2009, Gene Chizik at Auburn. They went and got him, and he was, what, 2-15 at Iowa State?
Something like that. Not good. And you know what? He won a national title, but if you take the Cam Newton year out, his numbers are not very good.
He's been pretty awful. Mississippi State hired Dan Mullen, offensive coordinator at Florida, and Lane Kiffin at Tennessee, and he was there for a year, so let's not even count that one.
He came from the Raiders, so that was a sitting head coach. But looking at this list, I mean...
It's a grab bag. When you talk to Jeff Long about what he, you know, wants to do and kind of where his priority level is, it sounds like he would like to go with a sitting head coach, someone who has experience. Then he might consider a coordinator, which really seems to be one of the more popular, you know, choices with Mullen and Muschamp and Franklin. You know, I don't know what direction you go, but I just think as we're trying to figure out what's Arkansas going to hire, what can they hire, I think it's interesting and a little telling to go through and look at the list of what people have hired.
I totally agree. And so if we're going to look at the programs that have hired sitting head coaches, they're not hiring John Gruden. They're not hiring a big flashy name. You've got Gene Chizik, who had a terrible record at Iowa State, who was still riding the coattails of being a good defensive coordinator at Texas, but not exactly winning the world over. That was actually the first time I ever saw that Hitler video people like to change the subtitles on, you know, about when they hired Gene Chizik. That cracked me up. Then you got Derek Dooley. Talk about an underwhelming hire. I'd never even heard of the guy when that happened. I mean, right. Who the heck is Derek Dooley? And then you've got Hugh Freeze, who, you know, by all accounts is doing a pretty good job so far at Ole Miss, but like you said, had very little experience and it came from a very small program. So these are the realistic expectations Arkansas fans can expect if you're going to go get a sitting head coach. I mean, Charlie Strong is the name that gets thrown around all over the joint. Charlie Strong's resume is a lot more impressive than any of these guys. Not that I'm saying that hire can't happen, but even that may be a bit of a reach, especially because he went on the Jim Rome show today and publicly said, I'm not taking that job. I'm not going anywhere, which I know we talked about this before. You didn't really like that very much. Why?
Well, I just think it's silly to back yourself into a corner like that and then to use the kids, to use the players. Oh, I would never walk out. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but basically I would never walk out on my kids like that.
Because I asked them to commit, so I'm going to commit to them. That kind of stuff.
And that just seems like such a silly thing to do. I mean, here's my background. Here's where I come from. And I'm not comparing media and coaching, but media is a competitive field. It's full of people who move and change jobs. I mean, that's what I did. I mean, I'm about to hit my fifth year at Arkansas Sports 360, but before that, my longest stop anywhere was 3 years because I had a goal in mind. I wanted to get to a certain position and do a certain thing, and that required me changing jobs and changing frequently. And it's much like the coaching profession. The days of Bobby Bowden and Joe Paterno and even a Houston Nutt who's at a school for 10 years, I mean, those are few and far between. And if you're at a school like Louisville or Louisiana Tech or wherever, there's a chance you're not going to be there forever. And I don't know why you paint yourself into a corner. And maybe, I mean, who knows? Like, I've never talked to Charlie Strong. Maybe that's his destination job. Maybe he really thinks that in a crumbling Big East, he can get it done. Maybe he thinks that's where he needs to be forever. I just have a hard time believing that someone who's in that profession, who's competitive, wouldn't consider a better opportunity if it came his way. And I think the appropriate thing to say is, I'm focused on this year. It's flattering that people would be interested in me, and I want to continue our success here. And that way you don't paint yourself into a corner.
Yeah. I have a couple of points on this, specifically on Charlie Strong, a buddy of mine that I went to college with who covers Louisville, works in the Louisville market, covers Louisville and Kentucky, tweeted today that he believes what Charlie Strong said on the radio, because if you go to his press conferences weekly, which my friend Adam Lefko does, follow him on Twitter if you want, L-E-F-K-O-E, Adam Lefko, all one word. He said if you go to his press conferences, Charlie Strong can't BS. He's not good at BS, so he's pretty much a straightforward, honest guy. So if that's the case and he says, I'm not going anywhere, maybe you take him for what he says. I put about 1% stock into it, because we've heard coaches say, I'm not going anywhere, and then they leave. Very specifically, Nick Saban said directly about the Alabama job, I'm not taking the Alabama job, and then a couple months later took the Alabama job. You know, Bobby Petrino,
within 24 hours.
Yeah, said he's not going anywhere, left. So, you know, we're looking at the SEC history here and the caliber of a sitting head coach you can go out and get. Charlie Strong's probably at the top end of that. And I think that's where Arkansas fans need to kind of resolve themselves to aim for, because, you know, they're going to come back and say, oh, well, what about Bobby Petrino? That was a big flash out. Look, the Bobby Petrino, the Lane Kiffin, and even the Nick Saban, although Alabama presents a much rosier destination than Arkansas, those kinds of hires are the exception and not the rule. There's such bizarre circumstances that you cannot count on that thing happening in your favor. You cannot count on inventing a scenario in which Pete Carroll wants to leave Seattle and is going to show up on Arkansas's doorstep. You just can't do that. So that's the caliber of head coach you can get if you're not going to go the coordinator route. Now, we've seen many a time the coordinator comes in and becomes the flashy name, the Bob Stoops, the Mark Richt, you know, and maybe Kirby Smart's that guy, maybe not, but I don't know. I feel like this fan base wouldn't be satisfied with a coordinator hire.
The only one that they continue to throw out is Kirby Smart, and I just don't think we have a body of – we just don't know. I mean, he kind of came up with Nick Saban. That's kind of where he made his name. That's why we know him. He's so closely tied. It's not like a Will Muschamp who had, you know, been under Saban and then proved himself other places. And even that hire, I mean, it's looking good right now. Florida's off to a nice start. But, I mean,
he had one more bad year and he was going to get run out of town because they were so bad last year.
So even that hire, you know, we really didn't know. So Kirby Smart is a name that's come up. You know, one name that'll come up in terms of coordinators is Chad Morris, the offensive coordinator at Clemson.
Yeah, big flashy offense.
Yep, I mean he and Gus Malzahn run identical offenses. So you know, I don't know if people would be satisfied with that. But the coordinators really, there aren't a lot of names that are going to excite people. But I think people need to look at what the rest of the SEC has done. Ole Miss had to go with a guy who didn't have a whole lot of success or a whole lot of experience at the D1 level. But Florida has all the money in the world.
Could have hired basically anybody they wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason Bobby Petrino got that $18 million buyout. Florida wanted him.
Yeah. I mean, Derek Dooley at Tennessee. They're on a new athletic director now. They've got some issues there. But they had money to spend, and they wound up going the Derek Dooley route. So I just think if you know what other people have done in similar positions, I just think fans need to be aware of that. And I'm not saying they don't go out and get a great hire. Maybe they can talk Gary Patterson into leaving TCU or, you know, whatever. I just think we need to be aware of what the other hires have been.
I don't see any scenario where Gary Patterson leave TCU. But bottom line is, no matter who Jeff Long ends up hiring, whether it's a coach or a coordinator, hiring coaches is a risky business. You can win the press conference and lose a whole lot on the field. You know, there's just no such thing as a guarantee. So, you know, going forward, you know, looking at not just, you know, we're looking at history in the SEC here. I want to look at history in the national championship game. Guys that are getting it done, they're defensive coaches. Mm-hmm. They're Nick Saban. They're Les Miles. The only offensive-minded coach that's really won a title in the last, you know, few years is Urban Meyer. But Gene Chizik is a defensive coach. You know, going back to those Miami teams, you know, hung their hats on defense. You know, as much as we've all loved Arkansas's offense the last few years under Bobby Petrino, and this fan base wants to keep that going, you know, maybe you bring in a Chad Morris, like you mentioned, I feel like you've got to go the defensive route to reach the mountaintop.
Yeah, I think, although offensive skill players, it's easier to find a good group of quarterbacks and receivers than it is to go out and find dominant SEC pro potential caliber defensive linemen.
I think Arkansas is proving that.
Yep. And so, you know, with that in mind, maybe you stick with the offense and just hope you can outscore people. But conventional wisdom says, I mean, five of the last six, you know, SEC teams that have gone on to win the national championship have ranked in the top five in defense, in run defense, stopping the run. And Arkansas struggled with that.
And the one year that they're finally putting together a moderate run defense, everything else has gone to hell in a handbasket, right? Yep. I mean, isn't that just karma for you?
Yeah, that's wild. The you know what's interesting is the stats, you know, I'm looking at collegefootballstatistics.com, cfbstats.com, and I'm looking at national rankings for pass defense, and there are these names that keep coming up either from fans, from media, from outside observers. There are names that keep coming up in the Arkansas coaching search. Art Briles at Baylor has the worst pass defense in the country.
Now, a lot of that's due to the most recent game, you know, Geno Smith and one of the best offenses in the country. But, yes, I agree with you. Baylor's pass defense is bad.
Sonny Dykes, Louisiana Tech. He's become a hot name in coaching searches. Another terrible defense. Ranks 123 in the country. West Virginia, everybody likes Dana Holgorsen, his passing offense. They have the 122nd pass defense. Arkansas is 121. Louisiana Lafayette, Mark Hudspeth, he's a guy that's come up, and he has the 120th pass defense. So the five worst pass defenses in the country, four are guys that people have mentioned would be good for Arkansas. So do you just scratch them off the list now because of that?
Maybe. It depends on how they're bringing their D coordinator with them. I mean, you know, Bobby Petrino was an offensive guy and always would hire a defensive coordinator. Sorry, I'm distracted here. My wife just texted me that my dog just threw up all over our bed. Our dog has a little bit of problem of eating other dog feces.
Oh.
And apparently she had gotten into a little too much of it and now has regurgitated it onto our bed.
That's disgusting.
That is going to haunt me for the rest of my life. That is gross. I'm sorry. I just took this totally off the rails.
Wow. I'm speechless. Thanks for sharing that with the people, though. I'm sure they really appreciate knowing and having that image in their head now.
I'm thinking about it all over my bed. I got to sleep there. I mean, obviously, we're going to clean it, but ugh. On that note, maybe we better start winding down. Let's get on the spot here. Let's get off of that topic. Chris, give me something on your sports bucket list. You know, in our profession, we get to go to a lot of things and see a lot of things in person that are cool. But give me something that you'd never get to go to professionally, but it's on your list before you die.
I'd like to go to a Final Four. I'd like to.
Yeah, but you might get there professionally. Maybe. I mean, it's within the realm of possibility.
Yeah. Okay. That's true. Gosh. Let's see. I mean, a lot of the things that are immediately coming into mind are things that I guess theoretically I could do, like cover a BCS national championship, maybe one day.
This is why it's a good question. I'm trying to get you outside your comfort zone.
Outside my comfort zone. You know what? I'd like to go to – I'm not a big hockey guy, but I would love to go to like a Stanley Cup finals that goes into overtime.
Yeah.
Like I'm not a huge hockey guy, but watching hockey – and watching it go into extra periods, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm not a hockey guy either. I don't watch it on TV. You know, even the playoffs, I don't really get into it. But by all accounts, by everyone that I've ever talked to about it, hockey in person is thrilling. And I would imagine in an intense playoff atmosphere, you'd ratchet it up even higher. So I think that's a good answer. That'd probably be a lot of fun.
Like, you know, like an Olympic gold medal basketball game, that would be
very cool.
That'd be cool. Or, you know, go watch the 100 or the 200 in the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love to read Bill Simmons for The Sports Guy, and he went and covered the Olympics for the first time this year. And he talked about everyone he spoke to said, no matter what you're doing, make arrangements, go to the 100 finals.
Yep.
And so he went over there like hours early just to make sure he had a seat, and said it was just incredible. I mean, just the intensity and the energy and the electricity in the stadium is just unparalleled.
Yeah.
So that'd be really cool.
I got a chance earlier this year, as we've talked about. I got to go to Oregon and see a game at Autzen Stadium. That's always been – I mean, a lot of things on my sports bucket list are college football related, stadium related. I'm looking forward to Arkansas's first game at Missouri, because then I will have been to all the SEC stadiums. I got to cross Vanderbilt off last year, just went to College Station. Now all that's left is going to Missouri. And I wouldn't mind – I've actually never been to an SEC championship game. So professionally, that's something I'd like to cover. What about you? What's on your
One of the things on the top of my sports bucket list is to go to Wimbledon. And more specifically, take my father to Wimbledon. My father's a big tennis fan. He got me into tennis as a kid. I played, you know, growing up and into high school and whatnot. And for my money, you know, I don't watch a lot of tennis until the majors come around, and then I don't really even watch until the semis or the finals. But for my money, a really high-level tennis match is about as good as sports can get. Some of those epic, you know, Federer-Roddick, Federer-Nadal, you know, Djokovic, whoever, some of those matches that are just long sets, long points, you know, just grueling, high-level, high-skill tennis, I think is just outstanding. And then on top of that, you know, Wimbledon's kind of the king of the mountain as far as tennis, and everyone wears white, and it's all prim and proper, and in the nice grass and England and all that. So I think that would just be really a lot of fun.
I like that. I'll go with you.
Yeah? You want to bring your dad?
Book me a ticket. Yeah.
The four of us?
Yeah.
All right, Dad, you heard it. I can't afford it yet, but someday. We'll,
one day.
I'm going to take you to Wimbledon, and if I don't, I'm a bad son. I'm on the record.
There you go.
All right, let's wrap things up. You got any homework for the folks?
Gosh. No, I got nothing.
No?
What do you got?
I told you to watch South Park last week. I hope you did, because it was actually a sports-related episode. Well, I don't mean you, the people that are listening. They
I don't count?
They touched on – well, I don't like you, so I don't care what you think. They touched on everything going on with the NFL right now and getting rid of kickoffs and turning it into a pansy sport. And in typical South Park fashion, took it way over the top and even gross at times. But, yeah, continue to watch South Park if you're not. You know, everything's coming back. It's that time of year. All the good shows are back on television for the most part. I'll give you another comedy. I would imagine most everybody's on this bandwagon, and if you're not, where the heck have you been? And I think this is like the fourth season, so you might as well go back to the start. Modern Family. It premiered, strong premiere. I mean, that is such a solid show in just about every way. I got to thinking about this. The longer I watched the show, I remember saying to my wife, I don't think there's been a bad episode yet. And to my recollection, I think there's only been one episode where I was kind of like, eh. But everything else has been amazing. It holds a standard that is just unmatched.
I have to endorse that. That's one of our must watches in the Bond household is Modern Family. So I strongly endorse that.
All right, we are in agreement. What's going on with Arc 360 this week?
We'll be at Auburn for the game on Saturday, so we'll have our usual game coverage. I'll be, as we alluded to on the podcast, I'm working up a list of previous coaching hires. I'm going to take a look at their salaries before they got hired, what they're making now, and kind of how the hires have fared for each of these schools in the SEC. Jim Harris has a great breakdown of really where it went wrong for Arkansas. That 2010 recruiting class has really, really not panned out. And when, you know, they've had several people that have performed, but Zach Hawker has kind of been the star of that class.
Yeah. Byron Jones.
Byron Jones, one of the stars, I guess. So read Jim Harris. We'll have our weekly gambling picks Saturday Roulette on Friday. And like I said, I'll be down in Auburn, Alabama with Razorback Nation.
Yeah, Razorback Nation will be on location as well, as we always are. I personally won't be there. I've kind of pulled out of all the road trips this year because my wife is 9 months pregnant, and I'm terrified of being stuck on the road when she goes into labor. So I didn't go to A&M. I'm not going to Auburn.
That was the excuse.
Oh, yeah. We'll take that up with my wife and my unborn child, because there's no way I'm missing that. But yeah, we'll be there, you know, and my part will be from the studio here. Of course, we'll have our 15-minute gear-up show on Friday nights. We're going to have a cool story flashing back to the last time Arkansas went to Auburn. You know, that was when Tyler Wilson took over for Mallett and really had his coming out party as a great quarterback. So we'll look back on that. You know, we'll break down the matchup. And then Saturday morning from around 9 to 10 a.m., our game day show live from Auburn. It'll be on Fox 24 here in Northwest Arkansas. And it'll be on KARZ in Little Rock in Central Arkansas. We have to move it there because on Saturday mornings, NBC has like the Saturday morning cartoons and stuff, and we're not allowed to preempt that because kids have to have their cartoons. So we move it to our sister stations. But
good.
But we'll have all sorts of in-game or in-depth game coverage. We'll be interviewing an Auburn media member to get some more insight on the Tigers. And for our media member special guest on the Razorbacks, it'll be the one, the only, Christopher Josephiah Bond. That's your middle name, right? Josephiah?
Yes.
Is that even a name? I made it up.
Robert.
Robert Josephiah. They're one and the same. So, yeah, check us out, Razorback Nation, KWAKARK. Yeah, we're happy to have you on. Okay, it's the show, Graham. Parting thoughts?
No.
My parting thought is just hang in there, folks. The John L. contract is almost expired. The season's almost over. In a lot of ways, you know, if this season was a dog, it'd be time for euthanasia. But
or it'd be pooping on your bed or whatever your dog's doing.
And my wife is texting me, what is my responsibility to clean? I'm really looking forward to this. Okay, that is another showgram in the books. Check us out, Arkansas Sports 360, Razorback Nation. For Chris, I'm Adam. Stay cool, folks.
Thank you.
That's not how I stop it. This is how I stop it.